Hi, welcome to this week's edition of Blue Sock, which comes slightly late today. I do apologise, M50 traffic and all that. But we look forward to our match against England, all your Six Nations action, and of course, look back over the Pro 14 and our victory in the wind and the rain against the Cheetahs. So, as we start with that one first, pretty good victory in the wet in the RDS last Saturday.
Yeah, I was impressed with them. In absolute awful conditions, really, really bad. They had to clear both stands. The conditions were so hazardous. Both stands at the end, and we were all wedged into two stands. But I was so glad I moved up the back of the stands because the weather was, you could see the people at the front of the stands cowering and putting on their ponchos. So I wouldn't fancy being a South African chap on the field after coming from 30 degree heat in Bloemfontein. I know Pienaar is probably used to it, but maybe a lot of the rest of them weren't so used to
No, I would
it.
imagine
And
that.
I think they put up a pretty good show, and they really weren't disheartened by going whatever it was 36 big points behind. They came back and put on a few, which is good to see from them. In the adversity, getting pumped by a team and coming having the wherewithal to come back.
It's a pity, well, not a pity, it's a pity from their point of view, they didn't play
Like that at the
that
beginning,
well,
yeah.
even that play that front row from the very start. And it took them 50 minutes of the match to realize that they actually had
The right front row
well, even but a
on the
dominant,
bench.
like every time it was going to be probably a penalty against if they'd used it, and in those kind of conditions, just
That's what
keep
you need.
playing the ball down in the corners.
Yeah, so sometimes Leinster have fallen off it a bit when the changes come in or after the changes come in, but you have to say Leinster played the conditions very, very well. We saw the week before, we saw England against Scotland. Two supposedly better teams playing supposedly higher standard of rugby. Well, it is a higher standard of rugby. Failed to manage conditions as well as Leinster did. And indeed, towards the end, as Cheetahs did. I think a huge amount of credit for that has to go to Kieran Frawley. I thought he had an excellent game.
Yep, absolutely.
Thought his range of passing and the passes he selected were absolutely top notch. He managed the conditions really, really
He
well.
did.
And that's what you have to do
But
on a day like that.
even from the get-go, within I don't know how many minutes, like 3 minutes, he put in a beautiful kick, a diagonal kick into the far corner, and it was just kind of a just as you said, he was just showing a great range of passing, but also like it was just his intent that he wanted to go out there and boss it. And I suppose from his point of view, he's thinking, okay, there's a couple of lads ahead of me that are on the Irish on the national team, but it's his opportunity now to kind of say, well, I'm third choice behind, Sexton and Byrne.
Yeah,
Let's see, can I change that?
it gives him it gives him a chance to put his hand up. And which in fairness to him he took. I thought he was very, very good. I wasn't, unlike John, I wasn't brave enough to brave the conditions
I
because
live a lot closer, Dave.
I had a mother-in-law's 17th birthday to go to. I do have a legitimate excuse, but I will
That's
be
pretty
honest here.
good.
I will be honest here that even if I didn't have that, there's no fucking way I would have gone to that match in
Yeah,
those conditions. Not a chance. And I sit and I'm in the dry part of the ground, and I'm not stupid.
that was the option I took. I looked out
Yeah.
the window and went,
You're I was
Fair
looking
weather
across at
grounds.
Absolutely.
at your
Literally.
guys where you normally stand, about half the terrace was empty.
Yeah, I noticed that
And
on
they were all stepped
TV. You
back.
could see people do actually have legs in there, you could
Yeah.
see.
About half the terrace was full, but it was the back half.
Yeah, I know. Just the weather was just atrocious. It really, really was.
I mean, it must have been
Fair play
one.
to anyone who got who went. But again,
Well,
then
you have
again,
to take your hat off to the 8,000 brave
yeah, you do.
souls
Yeah,
who
absolutely.
turned
Yeah,
up,
fair play to them.
and especially at this time of the year where, Six Nations tickets aren't cheap. There's people probably going over to the match in Twickenham at the weekend,
Lucky
but people
bastard.
did kind of come out when there's a great festival of rugby on at this time of year with the
Yeah.
Six Nations, and also obviously the matches coming up in the Aviva with Leinster with the Munster game and the Saracens game. People could quite easily pick and choose, and they but as
Like
I
we
said, eight like we did, but
did.
8,000 people didn't.
Yes, that's true. And
We're all
it was a large
outsiders who
crowd.
can
It was a
walk.
large crowd of the weekend, so fair play.
Indeed.
So I was just going to say that I thought that the fellas that came back from the Ireland camp played particularly well. Like they kind of readjusted back in, like under the Schmidt regime. When he was coach of Leinster, I remember he was very reluctant to welcome back fellas
Yeah,
from the,
stick him on the bench at best.
like he was like, well, you haven't started. If you haven't trained on Monday with us, he ain't gonna pick up the,
Yeah.
put on the
Cones.
boots.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, if they weren't, I get the impression that those guys were probably training all week, that they were released after the weekend rather than released on the
Friday
kind
of
thing.
Yeah.
So they're only going to get the bench. But, you know, like you say, fair play to them. They, like, everybody really dug in. Like, they seem to have a thing going now that they're, they've got an incredible record this season, and they don't want to be on the team that relinquishes that record.
Yeah.
So, you know, they weren't going to do it this week. We actually have a game next week in the Ganol.
In the Ganol,
yeah.
In the Ganol.
It's a while since that name's been used and bandied around in this company.
And that's not the Ganol in North County Dublin.
No, it's not the Ganol. The Ganol.
It's the Ganol in Neath. So I'm sure we'll get to that later. But I was extremely, extremely impressed with the game, and I hope we can perform as well when we go over to there. Back garden.
Yeah, well, a lot of the other games kind of went to according to plan, except Ospreys win, getting their, I think, their second win of the season.
It was
against Ulster, which I thought was quite an unusual result. I mean, and it's obviously coming into the week that we ended up having to play them over there.
Yeah, they got a bit of a fillip from that, and they got Mike Ruddock in. There's whispers about various other head coaches.
Dai Young.
I don't know if it'll be Dai Young now, but. There was whispers of Toby Booth coming over there.
Heard that, yeah.
To take over, which would be interesting. Mm. Another forwards coach. Mike Ruddock obviously has them playing with a bit of pride, though. You know, it seems they can do that to Ulster. Ulster are no slouches, even without their few internationals. They're a decent side.
But they would have had a few of the fellas that had...
returnees.
And a few lads that might have... felt a bit irked from not getting selected.
McCluskey
being one, I'm sure. Was Geordie Murphy playing?
He came on. They had Ospreys started off very, very well, and got up a decent lead. I think they were 14 points ahead at one stage.
That's right, yeah.
Then Ulster clawed it back.
But they couldn't take it home.
And then conceded a stupid penalty once they had done so. And Ospreys buried the penalty, and that was kind of all she wrote for scoring. It was poor enough from Ulster, but, you know, Ospreys don't give a shit if Ulster are poor or good. Yeah. Ospreys beat them. Ospreys did what they had to do.
And
getting some kind of momentum with a new coach in there, and it kind of justifies what he's been saying to the players, if you do this, 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 and this.
Mm.
And then they do this, 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 and this, and they get the win. And that's you take that on to the next day. I would have preferred they hadn't done it the week before playing us.
Yeah.
As long as they don't do it the week of playing us.
Yeah.
But I'm sure Ulster are kicking themselves, knowing that the cheetahs were coming to Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
Which, okay, I know the weather kind of, but if they had been, all things been equal, generally clubs that come to Dublin don't come away with any points.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Ulster were thinking, if we can get over there, we can extend our lead into second place. But now, like, it's, you know what I mean, it's a Millstone game, really.
It's Pienaar's homecoming game next weekend.
See, he kind of stirred the pot a little bit. He gave an interview and said he was, hasn't really settled in the 3 years that he's been left, and misses it, and
misses his church.
I think the talk that they want to return there when
he
finishes
up.
That's
always been his plan.
Yeah,
yeah. It's always been his plan.
He hasn't sold his house or anything.
His missus didn't settle in France at all.
No.
And his sister died.
He might as well go into coaching with Ulster, you never know what might happen there. Who knows? Still playing anyway. I mean, the guy must be knocking on for 75 now.
Yeah, 78 or 89, I think.
He's up there. So you can't see him playing another season after this one, can you?
No, it depends on the way there.
Depends on how he feels. You know, I mean, some guys can go on.
He looks fit.
He looks in good nick.
He looks after himself.
A lot of guys who get to a certain age, it's not the match. It's how they feel on the Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday.
Mm.
You know, and as you get older, it's the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday get harder. But if he's still doing that,
yeah,
if he's still okay at that stage of the week, then he'll probably go on for another year. It depends on himself.
But you hear a lot of the ex-player or the former players have been interviewed, and they're kind of going, well, I just couldn't. I just had enough. Like Tommy Bowe, I've heard him been interviewed, and he was saying, no, I've just hit the right time. I wanted to walk away. I think Trimble said more or less the same.
Well,
he could still walk, yeah.
It is. I mean, that's basically it. I mean, the players have to do what they feel is best for themselves, but it depends on how they feel themselves. He could go on another year. He could decide to stop.
Yeah.
You never know.
And so just a couple of the results. Munster, obviously, they hammered the Kings. We put 60 odd points on them.
Cass Freeze.
Mr. Hudnett had a cracking game for his debut.
Very good.
That's, very good player.
He looked like a young Sean O'Brien.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of...
He reminds me more of a young Anthony Foley, actually. He has that kind of... I mean, he's...
Nouse.
He has that nouse. Yeah, you can see him. He's a thinking man's rugby player. But he's a bit more... in fairness, he's a bit more of an athlete than Anthony Foley was. But he has that same kind of rugby brain. It'll be interesting to see if they can bring it through. If he learns the Afrikaans, you know.
It also means that, actually, a Munster mate of mine sent me a thing saying, I know the Kings aren't up to much, but, you know, we put a good few tries in them and... It's always nice to win a local derby. man with a sense of humour. But it might make some of our back rowers less likely to leave. The fact that he has been uncovered as a live option with Jack O'Donoghue playing well. I'll
have to find somewhere for them.
So so on and so forth.
When's Jared Butler leaving?
Is he leaving? I think he's got another year or two.
I know, it's Jeff.
In his contract. But yeah, that would be a more likely destination for our back row, given that Adnet, etc. We've already got so many back rows up in Ulster.
Speaking of Connacht, they also had a very good win against Cardiff, your old team, John.
I haven't played for them since the 50s, though. Yeah.
I don't think anyone associated with Cardiff was particularly pleased with themselves about how that game went. They were dreadful.
I don't think so.
Mulvihill was quite scathing. The players themselves were quite scathing in their own performances. Certainly the media in Wales have been less than pleased. Cardiff are doing that flattering to deceive thing again, and now they're in full deception mode. You know, at the start of every season, Cardiff always start well. So, and people think there might be something in it.
So Wales Grand Slam?
So definitely Wales Grand Slam. Well, Wales can't do a Grand Slam.
No, of course not. No.
Can't even get a triple crown, lads. No.
But Cardiff have kind of... The wheels have fallen off the Cardiff wagon again this year. So it's going to be interesting to see, because I think that Mr. Mulvihill might have used up a lot of credit that he had in the bank. Mm. I think that's all gone. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And Welsh rugby can be a bit of a bear pit when it comes to coaching appointments, as we saw recently.
Well, maybe you're saying that Dáil Young is being at a loose end.
Well, he is a Cardiff man.
He is a Cardiff man. He brought them through a lot of their good times.
Yeah, yeah.
In the late '90s, so you never know. He might end up back there for the good of his health, or not.
You never know. So now turn our attention to the Six Nations. So we take on England and Twickenham on Sunday. Interesting reading. Since '82, I went to that match when I was in school. Remember Ginger McLaughlin's famous
solo try. Famous solo try,
We went. We were taking that match. It's under 13s in school, and since then we've played 19 times in Twickenham in Six Nations games, and we've won 6, which is quite a pretty good record, I would say, considering how crap we were for a long portion of that. Like, and even say in the
four
last
four of them in the actual Six Nations.
Exactly.
2000.
Exactly, and it's not a bad record, but one in three visits we win over there, which considering that rugby is like how important home advantage is, it's actually a pretty good return.
And if you think about it, that in the last 20 years England have won the World Cup, been to another final, final last year, so England have been the dominant force in the Northern Hemisphere over the last 20 years.
Well, we had two of those wins while they were world champions.
Yes, I know. So we've had...
They're in another World Cup final in 91 as well.
They were, yes. Yeah, what I was talking about. Yeah, okay, it does show that despite the home and away thing, I mean, international rugby at this level, because Ireland have been good over since 2000, have been certainly much better than they were in the 20 years previously. 20 years either side of the millennium are very different kind of views. Obviously, professionalism came in. But Ireland would go to... Ireland and Twickenham either win or get an absolute spanking. There doesn't seem to be much of a middle ground. Actually, when Joe Schmidt was in charge and Stuart Lancaster was in charge of England, England beat us, but it wasn't a spanking. But generally, it is a spanking if they win.
There's been quite a few spankings over there.
If they win, it's a spanking. If we win, it's...
The Tom Cork debacle in 2012.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds out.
Which that can never happen again, thanks to Sevens Rugby.
It's never happened again, thanks to 23-man squads, Dave.
No, Sevens Rugby. That's what's saying.
Anyway, you're a hobby horse.
It is an opportunity to dig a knife in.
I know.
Dave will grab it.
Oh, I've got more knowledge coming up later, don't worry.
Well, tweaking them, like, compared to the Welsh and the Scottish, especially the Scottish, I mean, they never win, literally never win in Twickenham. We've done pretty well. We've done, you know, we've nothing to fear going there. I mean, I can remember going there when we got smashed in, I think it was 0-2, and we were winning 3-0. And Jordan Murphy got stretchered off and we got battered.
Was that, that's the game that
48-6 or something, I can't remember.
Ultimately did for Gatland, is it?
Wasn't that after Gatland? I can't remember.
Because he was a head
coach. That was 0-0.
Oh, that was 0-0, yeah. We got a doing that day as well.
Yeah.
Well, and that was ultimately, I think, his...
Yeah, it was, because Eddie O'Sullivan was brought in behind him.
But the two after that, Eddie O'Sullivan has the most wins. He got 0-4 and 0-6. Joe Schmidt got one. Declan Kidney got one. And Farrell, we have yet to see.
Very interesting dynamic,
isn't it? Like, I mean, obviously he's coached Ireland against England as an assistant coach, but this time he's actually the head coach. And
he's also coached England against Ireland several times as an assistant coach. And obviously his son is very high up in the leadership group.
Well.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many of that 15 Rugby World Cup, England Rugby World Cup, like the, there's obviously Cat, Farrell, Lancaster, and your man down in Munster, Roundtree.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's amazing.
We're hoovering them up.
Really, you know what I mean? Like, but it, like, you're kind of, they have so many coaches in England that are just discarded.
Yeah.
Like, they're still good coaches. They just, that campaign went poorly for them.
There's a soccerification of the England coaching job in rugby, where unless you win the World Cup, you're an absolute failure, an abject failure. Lancaster and Farrell made a mistake. The mistake I think they made was substituting Burgess against Wales.
Yeah, funny, irony of all ironies.
Yes, yeah, that was the mistake they made. Yeah. And it was one mistake in a campaign.
They couldn't do anything about the captain's decision to take a line out and not take points to go.
What I'm talking about is in terms of coaching staff.
I agree with you on that.
They made one mistake over... I mean, they took a fairly dishevelled, shambolic England setup after the previous World Cup with all the stuff about jumping into harbours and door...
All the good things.
But it had to... The England rugby team was at a low ebb in terms of what the public thought about it, what the rugby public thought about it. And they turned that around completely. They made that one mistake in that one match and they basically ended up getting fired or not having their contracts renewed or extended or whatever.
They had a great record up until that.
They had a very good record up until that. Now, other teams are reaping the benefit of them.
We really are.
And England, for all, as you said, they have a lot of coaches, but they discard them all so quickly that they've had to go overseas for a coach.
Eddie Jones, anyone?
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying.
He's still there.
Yeah, they had to go overseas for a coach.
No,
what did O'Driscoll say? He called him out on something, didn't he? I think he was baiting him and kind of said, do you remember what you said about...
Johnny Sexton a couple of years ago.
If I was his parents, I'd be concerned.
Yeah.
And he said the same thing about one of the Scottish lads. It was a Welsh guy, wasn't it, last season?
Who was that?
The out half.
Bigger.
He said the same thing again. Like, and you know, that's
he can tip. He's a funny guy, but he can tip over into the classless at times.
Shitty Little Island.
That was to an audience of, you know, everything's on video nowadays. But it's very hard to, very easy to take these things out of context when you see them on Twitter.
But if you take them in the context of stuff being said by Eddie Jones, then that does kind of make a difference. But that's Eddie Jones.
Not necessarily defending the guy.
If you hire Eddie Jones, you know you're going to get that because that's the Eddie Jones. I'm not going to say it's the brand because it's not a brand. It's how he is. I mean, he is quite a confrontational...
I wonder what the...
There's the element of bogging about him, as they say in Australia. Bogan about him, there's that kind of thing, you know?
I wonder what the 57 old fart says.
Brian Moore called him, famously.
Will Carling.
I wonder what they think of him and be... In his, you know what I mean? They, I'm sure, will be very stiff upper lip and...
Well, they're too busy trying to get the tombolas out to try and save their clubs now that the RFU has cut all their funding.
Harsh.
Well, it's actually true at this stage. He's not... I mean, he wouldn't be in the traditional mould of an England rugby coach, who were either kind of guys like Stuart Lancaster in that kind of
old headmaster kind of
yeah, sports master yeah. kind of thing, or upper crust gentleman types. We'd say like
Dick Best like,
or Jack Rowell.
Mm.
He's not in that mould at all. He breaks that mould completely. So
well, he's a brash Aussie.
Well, he is. But I'd say he's been less than enthused with all the talk of Razzie Erasmus. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there, because because Ireland are going for a Grand Slam on Saturday. I mean, Sunday. I mean, that's
Triple Crown anyway.
Triple Crown. Sorry, so Triple Crown. I mean, the Triple, which is something like if when.
Well, we used to deride it not so long ago, didn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, when we were kids, winning a Triple Crown was enough to get you off homework and maybe a half day.
Mm. I remember they built the East Stand in the early 80s and they were almost going to call it the Triple Crown Stand.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was a huge thing. It was a huge thing. And it has become... And in the,
well, they've never had a trophy until 04, is it?
Kind of the postmodern knowingness of the game. We don't bother with that anymore because it's an old thing. But I actually think beating the three teams that are your closest rivals, your oldest rivals, I think that's an important thing.
Yeah, well, I'll take it on Saturday or Sunday, shall
I say? I think it's something to be valued. I know I'm almost alone entirely in that, yeah, but I still think it's something to be valued.
I like a good triple crown.
There's a place for tradition, you know?
Yeah.
Place for tradition. Turn our attention, I suppose, to the pitch. So, looking at the team, he selected pretty much, well, the same starting 15 as against Wales, just with the one exception, Darris coming in place of Deegan.
On the bench. He seems to have this new...
Stephen Harris says it was Patchell that he was talking about.
Ah, you're right.
Yeah. Thank you, Stephen.
He seems to have this Warren Gatland thing where he names his team very early. Joe Schmidt was the opposite. Yeah.
I think he's trying
to... Is it 5-2 yet? No, I'm not naming it yet. No. Farrell is just getting it.
There's a part of that is a commercial decision that they didn't want all the teams been dumped out 24 hours before the thing, so no sponsor got a chance for clean air. So now they each have a day.
Right. Okay.
And so the sponsor gets.
I did not know that. Yeah. Dave.
So there is a commercial element.
But I think there's also new room, sweeps fresh and
routines.
Everything's changing. You know that the players are saying that they're not spending as much time getting lectured to or. Endless hours on a laptop. They're actually doing stuff on the pitch, and
that's probably no harm. The change is good. The change will produce something. I'm not saying, like, far be it for me to shit on Joe Schmidt to any degree, but just any coach who's been there, brilliant and all as he was for that long, stuff needs to change to renew.
Oh yeah, you have to.
Team. Somebody needs to put his stamp on the thing. So there needs to be a
check. I said about 5 years is the And if you think about it,
Joe was there for six.
Joe was there for six. And then in Leinster beforehand. And we had the same thing with Declan Keating before that. He was Ireland coach for 5 or 6 years, but he'd been Munster coach for, a decade before that. So it can be thing. And then there's the other thing as well. Players always love the coach that picks them.
Of course.
Yesterday's coach is dead man walking.
Hmm.
Yeah, even sometimes today's coach that's going to be yesterday's coach.
Yeah, if they know, he's gone,
is not really that interesting. Yeah.
I've heard the same players say brilliant things. I mean, literally the same players say brilliant things about Gary Yella, Declan Kidney, Michael Checa, Joe Schmidt, Matt O'Connor. Declan Kidney is Irish coach. Joe Schmidt is Irish coach. And then they're in the paper saying, he's rubbish. So I really...
Yeah, well, you're right. You can't bite the hand that feeds you, Dave.
No.
But on the team itself, I suppose he's rewarding performance against Wales. Everybody was writing off Peter O'Mahony in the early days, and in fact, he was on the bench for the first match. Only Mr. Darris got injured. He wouldn't have been playing 75 minutes as he did.
But Darris hasn't played any rugby
in a month.
So
he's played 4 minutes in however long it is.
I think it's only a month,
absolutely. You can't start him.
Certainly not tricking him. That would be like the succession of back row players we destroyed by giving first caps to in Parc des Princes.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't do it. He's got the selection right for this team, for this game. He's made the changes on the bench. But... I mean, it's going to be a tough game, but the problem is England don't know. I don't think this England team knows who or what it is. because with the removal of the Vunipolas,
well, that's a big flip for us.
Yeah, with the removal of the Vunipolas,
who starts Ganger Marler?
Yes. The restriction of, look, don't worry, there won't be a brain cell between either of them anyway. So,
but like that Grange fella is just a model for being wind, for being able to wind him up.
No, oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
You could get a great few penalties out of him if you.
Oh, Tyke Ferrell will be happy, I guarantee you.
Tyke Ferrell will be cheating against him, will he?
Absolutely, I certainly hope so. If I ever saw a prop on the pitch not cheating, I'm very disappointed.
You better cheat better than everyone else.
Without the Vunipolas and with Tuilagi limited.
Well, he can't be that match fight either.
That's what I mean.
What was his injury? Was it in lower leg or something?
I don't know.
England, who I think want to be a hard carrying team, a power team, are still playing that way, but without any power guys.
Mm. And they've got Curry at eight, which.
Yeah, and strange decision.
It's a waste of a Curry game.
The personnel they have is a team that can play quick, clever, fast. Moving rugby, but they don't want to play that way. So they have the personnel to play one way and a game plan for different personnel.
But if you have Billy Vunipola in your team,
yeah,
you have possibly the best player in the world.
Yeah.
Because he can change how a game is,
yeah,
how the result ends up.
He can play either way. He's that good.
But he generally plays a power game.
Yeah.
Like we saw what he did to Leinster and what he did to, you know, New Zealand. And it was only really when the injuries were enforced in the scrum in the final against South Africa, and they tried to play a similar game against a very powerful side that they mightn't have been able to match them. But generally speaking, when they play teams in the Northern Hemisphere, if they play and they have the personnel to do it, then they're pretty much unplayable.
Mm-hmm.
But take him out of the team, it's hard to change a whole team's philosophy.
But with
just one player.
I know, but it's not just one guy. I mean, they've lost a lot of the power guys. They've lost all their power guys now. But they haven't changed their game plan to account.
Mako doesn't carry as much as Billy. Like, Billy is a reckoner.
No, but he is, but Mako's a huge tight carrier as well. He carries massively in the tight. They've both
got great hands, so.
They've lost all their power carriers, but they don't appear to. Now, they might have a new game plan for Sunday. I don't know. It is Sunday, isn't it?
Yeah, it is Sunday. Yeah. Yeah.
They might have a new game plan for Sunday. I don't know. But certainly in the games they've played thus far, they've tried to play game A with personnel B.
Mm.
When they should really be playing game B with personnel B.
Mm.
Well, all I can say is,
The selection of Curry. Curry went to that World Cup virtually unknown, apart from people who like would watch it regularly, but certainly to the larger public, and came back a superstar. But he's been played in a completely different position now. A position he's not really suited to. In a game,
he's
not
a seven,
really
though, really,
to.
Isn't he?
I mean, he is a seven,
play
yeah.
Six. But it's like having two sevens.
Yeah, he plays six. He plays six in the French way.
What's his name?
Underhill.
Dominic Underhill.
Yeah, they play with two
no,
sevens.
I wouldn't say that to his face.
But he's not a number eight, and he's not a number eight, and he's certainly not a power number eight, the way that he's been asked to play.
Hmm.
And that strikes me as strange.
He hasn't got the back of the scrum stuff either, though. He hasn't got that nailed down at all. You can see him.
People forget it's a skilled position. I've said this for years. Number eight is a skilled position, and people forget that. But you know, you look at England against France, and for 50 minutes they tried to play power rugby against them, and it got them nowhere. And then suddenly they realised that they had super quick outside backs and inside backs with super quick feet, and started using them. And what's his name?
Elliot.
not Daly, the other guy, the other winger.
May.
Ran May. Right. Scored two great tries, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it hadn't occurred to them to use them earlier. If it had, it might have made a big difference.
Yeah, an unusual one. Like just thinking about the game itself, like was there any positions that do you think there was fellas that could have been pushing for that didn't get selected
in the Irish team?
In the Irish team, sorry.
No, not with the injury, not with the absence of Ringrose. I think the team, and particularly after the performance against Wales, I think the team picked itself.
Yeah, and I think if there was any doubt, you know, of say, with the injury to Ringrose. And calls for McCluskey to come in, you know, and I don't know, I didn't see the match again for Ulster, but was he playing?
Yeah.
Right, so like he played in a team that was beaten by Ospreys, do you know what I mean? So he
clearly
didn't push his case forward.
Well, I mean, in fairness, there were parts of that game where Ulster actually played very well.
Right.
But he's not an international standard. centre. He's very good at what he
does. There's a lot of people pushing for him, though, isn't there?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, if I were going to go for that kind of player, I still wouldn't pick him. I'd pick Chris Farrell.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to go for that kind of player because I don't think it's the right kind of player. And we saw against Wales the difference. I mean, okay, he only played 40 minutes because he got injured. But we saw the difference Henshaw made.
Mm.
You know?
We've got a touch of the bludgeon on the bludgeon, though. They're great together, Henshaw and Eki. But, like, you know, once you've got Ringrose in there, you've got your rapier. You've got your man who can cut the back lines open, cut, you know, link everything.
Well, it doesn't pass them.
There is an element of blame to Henshaw as well.
There's too many tries for your liking.
I mean, when he plays inside centre, he can use his size, obviously, and he's a big, powerful guy. But he has quick feet and he has great hands.
He does, absolutely.
And he can play both ways.
And with him at 13 and Eki at 12, it sits better, I think.
Yeah, I certainly think so. I mean, the handlingest team, one of the most handlingest teams that Ireland have put out this decade. In the last 10 years, anyway, was Eki and Henshaw at centre in that Connacht team under Pat Lam.
Mm-hmm.
So they can play the game, you know. They can play skills based rugby.
Yeah, I think there's kind of, you fall into the trap of saying that Henshaw is a one trick pony
because
he's a big guy. Like he's actually a very skillful fella. And you know,
he's not Jamie Roberts, is that you're
saying? Well, he's not a Danaher, let's say, where I think people are kind of equating him to just a crash ball centre.
Kevin Maggs,
yeah, like, and he's not that type of player at all. And you know, I'd say, like, you know what I mean, he's the type of fella that originally was a fullback, that they played him this time last year against England at fullback. It didn't work out, but sure, he hadn't played there before for a considerable period of time.
Yeah, it's been quite a while since he played there.
But like, he still is a centre that has capability to play a fullback, so he's that skillful.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just give it to the big lad like Chris Farrell and run straight.
In fairness to Chris Farrell, he surprised us all with his hands.
Chris Farrell is very, yeah, I would say in fairness to Chris Farrell. But what Henshaw has that Chris Farrell doesn't have, or McCloskey, is a kicking game.
Mm.
He's actually a very good kicker of the ball. And you need a second kicker. I mean, okay, he's an outside centre, so it's one further. But you can bring him into second 5-8 if you want that second kicking option.
Yeah.
And he gives you that. I think that the partnership that we have is one that's won a lot of stuff. I mean, that was for half the last Grand Slam, that was the centre partnership.
Yeah.
So
in the year up to the World Cup, I think that Eki played in nearly all of the games.
It was either him
and Ringrose. Yeah. It seemed to be, you know,
one of the ones that didn't get injured.
So he had a lot of games for Ireland where he's got them across the line in both ends of the world. Mm. I'm very happy to have him. I think on a more serious point, you get a lot of the Luke Fitzgerald stuff about these guys are doing their people out of a, you know, doing Irish lads out of it. I actually think it's the exact opposite. I think the more even more guys like, say, Eddie Alokin, who've been through school here,
a Blanche boy,
the more, I think he went to Dallas Hall Church then.
No, he's from Blanche. Lived in Blanche.
But the more guys you have playing GAA, playing rugby, it just kind of makes, it gives people something good, positive to identify. You know, people who may not have a brain cell, who spout all kinds of racist nonsense, if they have people in their teams who are obviously nice, personable people who play really well, it just changes people's attitude. And makes people less little racist scumbags.
I'd rather see someone like Eki getting capped for Ireland than somebody who mum and dad are Irish but emigrated to England. And like, Eki has moved to Ireland, mm-hmm, 4 or 5 years ago, brought his young family over. They live here, they pay tax here, as opposed to someone whose mum and dad left 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Live in England, had their child over there, and played for London Irish.
You have the best guy out of all of
those. Sure, but I'd rather see somebody come to Ireland and make a decision to set up here rather than, like, as used to be the case, say, 20, 30 years ago, say, Simon Gagan, right, that supported England in soccer but would support, but played rugby for Ireland, and his mum or his dad were Irish, but generally played 95% of his rugby in England. And declared for Connacht when you only had to play a couple of matches in the Interpros, but then continued to play London Irish in Bath in England, mm-hmm. but didn't really contribute, with the exception of his 20 Ireland caps and his 20 Connacht appearances.
It's an interesting
That's
point
really
to make,
all
too.
That he contributed to Irish rugby. Whereas
not such a thing anymore, though.
No, I know that. I get that. But Aki has probably played 100 matches or more for Connacht and, say, 20 or 30 or 40 matches for Ireland.
Yeah,
but has contributed a lot to, you know, the 5 years that he's been here, and is kind of seen as a rallying point within that team and within even the supporters. He's like their hero. He's like their Rocky.
The laptop.
That
shows he's part of that the community and think.
But look, I'm sure
the reason why people try and differentiate between native Irish and second generation, third generation Irish, and then if you like new Irish, is because they're trying to other these people, right? They're trying to say, oh, Michael Bent is less Irish than me because I was born here. Bundy Aki is less Irish than Michael Bent. Or me, because I'm Irish. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to other people. Now, maybe not in sport, but in life in general, that's what they're trying to do. And these people deserve no oxygen whatsoever. I'm very disappointed with Luke Fitzgerald because he's actually a really, really intelligent, really, really nice guy. But the stuff he says about that stuff is
quite
no doubt he means nothing bad by it.
It's open.
It is stuff that is used by the Jem O'Dohertys of this world, shall we say.
Let's not get too political.
No.
Yeah, moving swiftly on.
And if you want to dig in, if you want to dig into my Twitter history, you're more than welcome. God help you for reading it. Jason has no clue what is happening in the news today.
Oh, some Sinn Féin.
I saw that.
So turn our attention briefly to the other games. Italy take on Scotland. Think there could be a chance of an upset there?
There could be.
It's in Italy, isn't it?
Yeah, that could well be.
And by upset, I do mean a home win.
it's the famous wooden spoon game.
Yeah.
Whoever loses that is going home with a piece of wood.
I see Finn Russell came out and had a reveal all interview and didn't come across very apologetic, or certainly wasn't making any of the sounds to try and ingratiate himself back into the squad.
That's what happens when you play in a superstar team over in Paris in a big flashy arena, and you know, I mean, in fairness, it is. That's the kind of team they are. They're a great team and all that, but they're a team of superstars who probably have attitude about themselves. He obviously does. So I don't know. That's not what you want playing for your country. You want guys who want to play for the country, exactly. And if the more talented guy doesn't want it, then you know, there's somebody else.
But like, it's amazing that like rugby is quite different than football. You know, like say Nicky Butt or when these guys stopped playing for England fairly early, like 27 or 28, because he was earning so much money playing for Man United, and he wanted to continue playing for them for as long as possible, and didn't want the interference of playing for his national team.
Yeah, but like, it's different
in rugby. But like, you know, there was 8,000 at a Pro 14 match last weekend, but there's 55,000 the week before at it. You know what I mean? Like, there's the level of interest.
Club game is the top of the game in soccer.
Exactly.
The club game is not the top of the game.
It's a different paradigm. Except maybe in France, which is where he's based,
mm-hmm.
Where the club game is very, very powerful.
They've had a couple of poor, or maybe 10 years of poor performances that somebody in the FRU or whatever, FFR, is making noises to say, no, actually, we need to sort this out because there's too much emphasis on the club game and not enough emphasis on the national team.
I agree, but I mean, France, it's a slightly different thing. I'd say there's thousands of people in Perpignan and Biarritz who couldn't give a shit about the French team because it's not their country, you know. you have that kind of thing
They still pay taxes to the French government, so yeah. I think at the end of the day,
but they also charge players from those areas traitor tax as well.
Really?
Yeah. Lisa Rizou has a very funny take on it. He used to play for soccer for France by paying traitor tax to ETA. Anyway, love story. But yeah, so I mean, Finn Russell, he came out, and then he got slammed the next day by Townsend et al. Lots of others kind of came out and said, oh, well, I don't really agree with that. You know, we have a team system that they damned him with faint praise.
Mm. It's amazing though that he actually, rather than just keeping his gob shut, came out and decided
to open it.
Then there's a few gobby fellas in that team, isn't there?
There are one or two, yes. Yes, mm. that Dunica Ryan.
And the other game, France against Wales. See, Wales had a little go, as you mentioned earlier, about Tyke Furlong, about his illegal scrummaging.
Yeah,
was it Humphreys that said it?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you'd think he's long enough in the tooth that he would have, again, kept his bail short.
Yeah, but Wales like to do that. They spend an awful lot of time chirping in the media. Always have done. I thought it was a Gatland thing. But I suppose these guys are kind of part of the Gatland system.
But you hear...
They do chirp a lot
But say, Robin McBride did a media conference the other day, and he was the most unassuming, you know, I'd say he's hard as nails if you had to... Exactly, or, you know, do a mauling session with him. But he, you know, he just didn't seem to be in any way offensive or...
Yeah, but the
culture of
the PR culture is different, you know? I mean, if he was to do a Wales on it, you'd soon find he'd be down in the back alley with Mick Dawson and Marcus Abukla flying the thumbscrews, you know? It's not how Leinster do it. Wales, on the other hand, they do chirp a lot. They do spend a lot of time talking to the media about the game coming up and the game going and how the referee is wrong and how the referee will be wrong and how the other team cheats or will cheat. I mean, they've been doing it for years. It's just what they do. I mean, to a certain extent, I'd say nobody pays any attention to it because it's white noise at this stage. If you do it too often...
The game is in Wales, isn't it?
Yeah.
So... France, like ourselves, are going away to defend their possible Grand Slam.
Mm.
Whereas Wales haven't...
This is a huge banana skin for France.
Haven't got a... I would say it's possibly more than that. I mean, what's France's record in Millennium Stadium?
I know, but like we're supposed to...
I think it's great.
I know, I agree, but like, you know, two wins and the draw, there's talk of them being a renaissance.
Oh, absolutely.
Turning this big corner, but...
I'm not sure that they have, B, I think their team is just that little bit young, likes of Entomac, and I just think they're just not
lacking a bit quite of experience
at the level yet. I think they're going to be formidable in 2023, and I think that's what the whole thing is about. They're having their own World Cup.
If Italy were able to get at their outside backs as easily as they did, you'd be damn sure Wales will.
I don't know. I can see it going either way, but it's interesting that we're both going away to... let's call it mainland Britain for the crack. To prolong our.
We're both going
Grand
to what
Slam
will
hopes.
Soon be the Rump UK.
Anyway,
some questions.
Yes,
we got some questions on the media of social. Murdo Thompson wants to know: do Irish players pay tax? Yes, they do. There's a tax relief scheme that professional sportsmen used to be able to take advantage of, but it's come to an end as some guys grandfathered in. And he says, Tooney will be toast if we lose, but Finn has come out of this, has been a real dick. Still love to watch him play, could be European player of the year. Well, that's true. I mean, he's a wonderful player to watch play when he's on.
Mm-hmm.
When he's off, you may as well be watching Arwell Thomas on a bad day. Mm-hmm. Brian Hughes makes a good point, and it actually leads into a news story from today. He says, Brian Byrne, Cronin, Kelleher, Tracy, Sheehan, all into two spots and maybe a backup. Discuss. Well, the news today is that Brian Byrne's going to Bristol on loan for the remainder of the season.
Wow.
I don't know how Ed Byrne will react to that. Will he cry himself to sleep at night without his twin? I don't know. Don't twins have that kind of weird...
Do they?
Yeah.
No, basically what will happen is Ed Byrne will be able to see how things are going.
Yes, there is that as well.
Over
yes,
in Bristol
yes, yes.
And report back to us.
Yeah.
So he might be hoovering up some of Ian Madigan's 700 grand.
Yeah, well,
I don't think Bristol are going to continue paying that.
Bristol are buying. Well, I don't think they're going to re-sign Madigan, or if they do, they'll do it at a lower.
It was funny.
That's what they're at. Maybe they're trying to bring his value down and maybe re-sign him.
But I used to love.
We'll give you a game if you stay.
I used to love watching him when he played, but I remember when he kind of his move didn't work out, and he was saying, "Well, there's only one team I couldn't ever see myself playing against Leinster."
Yeah.
And then I saw an interview with him, and he says, "Oh, I'd be very open to any offers that came from Ireland."
Yeah, you know? Well, you know, fair play to the guy. I mean, he is a great professional. He's a fabulous kicker. He's a lot going for him.
Until he sends a pound as well. But I know a few dealings with him, and he's...
I always found him very nice as well. Any games I had when I was with the sports club. And the other thing is about him, for a player of his type, we'll say the, for want of a better phrase, the Carlos Spencer, Shane Geraghty style player. Those guys were great when it was all going well, and when it was all going badly, they fell apart. The thing about Ian Madigan,
he didn't.
His goal kicking, for example, always remains rock solid. So he obviously has a strong mentality. Now, I don't think that he happens to be the best out half for Leinster, just the style we play and the style he plays. That's just the way it is. But he's a fantastic rugby player, and I think it's shocking that he didn't get a contract in Ireland last time around.
But maybe that's the price. It was a bit too much.
Bristol were backing Arctics full of money up to his house, and
possibly.
I'm sure Bordeaux were. I'm sure he was on big books in Bordeaux as well.
Yeah, well, he thought the better of that, and then
it was the culture. Yeah, it wasn't the money that he was giving out. It was the culture.
They stuck him on 500 grand.
You also have to remember that. I mean,
Sterling.
Well, that's how much that they'd have to pay him that much money, because he wouldn't be playing for Ireland. That's kind of the quid pro quo. You're not going to play for Ireland, so you may as well get a lot of money. I'd say if that time, and he was being shopped around the provinces, there's no doubt about it. He was doing every single media show that was going at the time. I mean we're about the only thing he wants about.
I think that
he was obviously been shopped around Ireland, and it was very striking how there were no takers, not even Ulster, who were coming into predictable out half trouble.
Would you rather have him or Billy Burns? Him.
There you go. Certainly him.
Billy Burns is in the Irish training squad.
Billy Burns is a very good player, and he's done very well, and he's made the most of his opportunity, but I'd still have Ian Madigan in a heartbeat.
Ian Madigan's just turning 30 now, though, isn't he?
He's just turning
30. I know, but there is this kind of magical line, isn't there?
Yeah.
Would you have Ian Madigan, or would you have Jack Carty?
I'd have Ian Madigan, actually.
I would have Ian Madigan. So, there's two players that he's going to get ahead of. Yeah. Joey Carberry's perma-injured.
JJ Hanrahan.
I'd have Ian Madigan ahead of him, too.
Blendell.
Perma-injured.
Will he ever play?
Perma-injured. Well, maybe not. I don't know. Hopefully he will.
And the other thing to remember about Ian Madigan is
I'm just marking off all the guys who...
But if you think to say there's 10, I'm just throwing the figure out there, 10 front-line out halves in Ireland.
Back in the days when it was just Raj.
You're probably talking... 7 of the 10 that you'd have Ian Madigan ahead of.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
At least.
Actually, I'd go 8 of the 10. The only guys I'd really... Well, hold on. Who's the 7th?
I'd say Sexton, right?
Sexton, yeah. Ross Byrne.
Carberry.
Yeah, I'd put him on a par with Carberry, indeed. Because he's a very similar style of player.
Yeah, similar enough, yeah.
But I'd certainly have him back in the Irish system. God almighty, yeah. A player like that. I'd
love that.
Absolutely,
like,
quality.
Yeah.
That's why I was so surprised.
Scrum half reserve?
Yeah, that's it. But, I mean, you look at him, he's tough as nails as well, because
he
played a lot of rugby at inside centre.
He's
very, very hard, and he's a good footballer. He's played a lot of inside. I actually thought that inside... I thought he'd be, in the Irish system, he'd take the place of Paddy Wallace as that guy, you know? But he can play there, he can play at 15 as well. Okay, he's not a brilliant fullback, but he's certainly more than adequate for Pro 14 rugby, along with his other attributes. That's why I was so surprised, especially with the trouble that was... coming down the line at Ulster, that everybody knew about. I mean, Ireland had already not taken Paddy Jackson to America.
Mm-hmm.
So there was something happening, but there was no takers. And then, funny enough, he's represented by Ryan Constable, or he was at the time represented by Ryan Constable.
You think that would have got him into Ulster?
Which you would have thought, but there was a rigid no. What's her name? Connacht were quite snitty about it, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of were quite rude about not wanting them from their former CEO, who soon bit the dust.
We shall see.
But
watch this space. He could be in negotiations currently.
I'd hope so. I'd love to see him back in Ireland. I think he'd be even at the age of 30, as cruel eld hath palsied his limbs. I still think that at 30 he'd be a worthwhile member of the Irish setup.
I remember when I was 30. Oh,
no, neither do I.
Black and white days.
Yeah.
Well, there was a couple of very interesting podcasts. One was on News Talk. It was an hour's interview with...
We never actually asked the question about the hookers.
Oh, sorry.
We never actually answered it. Like,
talk about tangents.
Like, he's talking about Brian Byrne, Crone and Kelleher, Tracy Sheehan into two spots and maybe a backup.
Yeah, that's actually.
It's actually a bit mental the way it's all gone.
Don't worry, they won't all be here next year.
Well,
yeah, but like, there's going to be more than two spots. Like, you're talking about an Heineken Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, you can know the first two. Like, you've got the guy who's sub on the Irish team and the fella that used to be sub on the Irish team.
Mm.
Yeah,
and well, then, there's two fellas who used to be sub on the Irish team.
Like, Cronin's been sub 90 times on the Irish team. Yeah. Tracy's done it twice or three times, whatever. But, like,
Cronin was the sub on the bench for Ireland when we were in Twickenham in 2010.
Was he?
Yeah. So that's how long? That's 10 years. Yeah, but the squeezed middle, Tracy and Byrne, you'd call the squeezed middle.
Yeah, I would, yeah.
Like, Kelleher and, well, Shane hasn't even made his Leinster debut yet.
No.
And there was a chap, Owen Clark, who actually went to Munster and, like, a lot of players have gone to Munster. I haven't seen anything of them. But he kind of went to Munster because of the emergence of guys like Kelleher, mainly Kelleher.
Mm.
And I think that Dan Sheen came into the space that he might have occupied had he stayed in Leinster.
Yeah.
And you've also got, Dan Sheen has a little brother who's only about 18 months younger than him.
Do you know what I'd love to do? I'd love to wait for one of these guys to actually play a senior game before I went mad on the hype.
Absolutely. But you know, they do look like really, really talented. Keller already has, you know, is in the Irish squad, so let's say he's there. But Sheen is coming up on the rails for sure. He, you know, like you say, you want to see him make his debut for Leinster at least before you go too mad.
Yeah.
You go offloading other players, but
because I mean, there's,
it could, in a year's time, it could be a huge headache.
There's a couple of things. I mean, there's going to be natural wastage with Cronin and Tracy anyway, or certainly with Cronin. Anyway.
Cronin is 33 or so. Yeah.
Brian Byrne is going to Bristol on loan, certainly in the short term. So you've got Kelleher, Tracy, Cronin here. Sheehan, who has yet to make his debut for Leinster.
It won't be long.
Let's not forget.
It won't be long.
So, I mean, it's not a pressing issue as of yet. It may well become one, but it's not as of yet. And another question there from Stephen Harris. Should Jones play Farrell at 10 or 12? Yes.
I play Farrell at 10 all day and twice on
Sundays.
Yeah,
so would I. Yeah.
George Ford is actually a great player, but I'm not sure he suits England's style of play.
No.
That 10-12 thing, that second 5-8 thing, I'm not sure it's suiting him.
No, I don't think it's working, getting the best out of either player.
I bring in Henry Slade, or your man is injured, isn't he, Joseph? I'd bring in somebody else and put Farrell at 10. And I'd have, what's his name, at 22? George Ford.
Yeah.
No, he's the kind of guy you bring on at 10.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're trying to defend the lead or when you're trying to, you know, loosen up the game.
I think Farrell is a far better out half than George Ford. And I think he's a far worse inside centre than Ford is out half. So I'd use him at out half.
I think I know what you mean.
I'd use him at half. I mean, if you think about it at the moment, you've got guys like him. You got Farrell, bigger, Sexton. There's a lot of great out halves around at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually quite lucky. And obviously the lads down in Southern Hampshire as well.
Just a few of them.
That's what I mean. I mean, there's a lot of really great out halves. So using one of them at 10, I like that 10-12 apps, but you have to have the right players for it. I don't think that they have.
Mm-hmm. Trying to shoehorn two good players into the team.
They trying to play Ward and Campbell that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just going back to, I was just about to say, there was a very, very interesting podcast on News Talk last Friday. It was an hour-long interview with Lancaster. But one of the questions that came up was, and it was Ger Gilroy doing it, and he'd been an advocate of trying to have this almost like American football, that you have the draft system or some
combine
or some sort of variant of it.
Voting for combine.
Yes.
But Lancaster was very adamant in saying, from his 3 years here, that the thing that makes Leinster special, and all the provinces special, is that identity.
Mm.
And that if you have too many people moving between the provinces, that you're diluting it. Now, you know what I mean? There's just two sides to the arguments, of course. But, like, when you hear one of the coaches coming out and saying, and now, maybe he might change his attitude if he was back in England and, you know,
wanted to see the Leinster.
I don't know, but I mean, if he didn't have any skin in the game. But I think he was been genuine about it, you know, that's what he thinks makes this play so special. And unlike a lot of the English clubs that there's no identity to the area, that a fella comes in and he could be from Newcastle but he's playing in Bristol, or he comes from Bath and he's playing up in, you know, Sale, but there's no kind of identity to the area.
That's a criticism I'd have of he who shall not be named. You look at Australia and you look how crowds have fallen off in Australia. Mm. And interest in, now there's a lot of other problems. I'm not saying it's all down to this or whatever, but shifting players around.
He broke it before he left.
Australia, their states are actual things.
Mm.
They're actual. I mean, Australia is, to all intents and purposes, a series of countries with an overarching federal government.
It's like the United States.
It's like the United States of America.
Except there's less.
So their states are actual real things, not nebulous historical constructs like we have in Ireland. And yet he managed to diminish, or sorry, not he, I'm not going to blame him. The identity of those states was diminished by the way players were moved around, seemingly willy-nilly, in Australian rugby. With Western Force, the Melbourne Rebels, and then switching guys between the Reds and the Waratahs and the Brumbies. If you diminish one of your brand identifiers so much, it can damage your brand.
I think it did
in Australia, and I think, look, we're not anywhere near that yet in Ireland, but I think it's something you have to be wary of.
And particularly when they have the state of origin in rugby league, and it was probably one of the major driving forces to make rugby league such a huge sport there, that they had these three-game series, and you know, they had legends of the game, and Queensland was traditionally the much weaker state within rugby league, and there was only a couple of teams, and back in the 90s there was only a couple of teams in what was known as the NSW rugby league. There was a couple. There was the Brisbane Broncos, and there was one other team. Can't remember which one.
Cowboys, was it?
Cowboys, yeah. From Queensland, yet they were still able to pretty much hold their own, you know, in the state of origin. And that sort of drove and brought the increased the interest level within that sport. Whereas, as you say, Dave, they've diminished the interest in rugby union. Like, you know, when you think back to the 90s again, rugby union was, I wouldn't say it was a huge sport, but it was so much bigger than it is now in Australia. Like, they were getting to World Cup finals, they were winning World Cup finals, they were producing fantastic players, and they were holding them off from going to rugby league, a much bigger and lucrative professional sport. And now, like, they're struggling. Like, when you look at a Super 14 match on the telly, it's dreadful. What I mean is there's zero atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's hard to get up for it when they're playing in stadiums that hold 20 or 50,000 people, and there's 5,000.
The old Murrayfield conundrum.
Yeah.
Well, what I have to take exception with you about, Dave, is calling Irish regions or Irish provinces some weird historical construct.
Nebulous historical
construct, when they've been around for 1,000 years, and Australia was only invaded by white people about 250 years ago.
What I mean is there is no difference.
Before I start thumping the table.
There's no difference being from Leinster or from Munster in terms of your relationship to, you know, your everyday life, right? Apart from the rugby team you support, really. I mean, it doesn't even make a difference in Gaelic football anymore. The Railway Cup, which was once the crown jewel of Gaelic football.
Irish by birth, Munster for life.
Yeah, yeah. A very conservative sport like Gaelic games, the Railway Cup, which was the provincial competition, which was originally a very strong competition, has completely fallen by the wayside. Like, completely.
Well, in fairness, the branches are and have always been organised.
And same again, but what I'm saying is, in Australia, a province is an actual legal identity. It's a state. It's a country in all but name.
Different tax in different states.
I mean, it is. It's like America. They have a common defence policy and a common foreign policy,
government.
And that's pretty much it.
Federal government in Canberra?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember Ireland going over and getting beaten, not by ACT, but getting beaten by ACT country.
Mm.
And getting beaten, not by New South Wales, but getting beaten by New South Wales country, because we weren't good enough to play New South Wales.
I'm actually rereading Brendan Fanning's fantastic book, From
There to Here.
There to Here.
Yeah.
About the leap from amateurism to professionalism. And there, one of the chapters is on a tour down to Australia, where they were beaten, as you mentioned, you know, the weaker teams were beating Ireland out the gate, and we were just
appalling. It finished up around 99, that book, didn't it?
I think would you fancy
any Australian Super Rugby team, Australian Super Rugby team, against any of the provinces at full strength, either both teams at full strength?
I haven't seen much of them lately, but
I wouldn't.
Most likely not.
I wouldn't.
They seem to be getting destroyed on a regular basis.
Yeah,
I'd see.
I stopped watching Super Rugby.
What's his name? Jordan Pataia is out of the summer tour, Ireland summer tour to Australia. Because he was a good player for them during the World Cup, actually.
Was, and he's only 6 years old.
Yeah.
Any more questions, Dave?
Born this millennium. There's no Leinster players that have made their debut who were born this millennium yet.
I know, yeah.
He's born in the World Cup.
I'm going to have to have
a word. He's born this millennium.
I'm going to have to have a word with Jamie Heaslip. He reckoned it would happen last year or the year before.
Yeah, well.
No, those are all our questions, okay. Jason. Well, and thank you for the questions. We really enjoyed them.
And briefly just turn our attention to Leinster's game next weekend.
In the Knoll.
So,
the Knoll.
Obviously, I would similar enough kind of team, obviously taking out the internationals, but it's going to be kind of a selection between seconds and thirds.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Be interesting to see, can we keep that train rolling? You know, what are we at now?
17
games on the bench.
I'd say there'll be a lot of guys who'll start at that game will still be available for selection. I mean, Deegan will probably be available for selection, will he? Unless he goes as 24
to him.
Yeah.
I don't think any of the Irish squad have been released.
They haven't actually, no, because it was Connacht were looking for Delane to be released.
Mm.
Apparently they made a formal request, but he hasn't been.
Well, I think Ireland are taking, they even got Bono in to talk to them. I think they're taking it seriously this week, so if you've even got a chance of making 0.0001% of a difference to the Irish team, you're not going to. You're going nowhere this weekend.
Professional sport at that level is so
tough. The Ospreys? Mm-hmm. What?
If something does give you, I mean, even Bono gives you that 0.01% of a boost, then take it. You know? They've had Christy Moore in. Christy Moore has played for the Irish squad 11 times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He enjoys it very much. He's a big rugby fan.
Interesting. Well,
Snow Patrol famously didn't play for them.
Snow Patrol famously wanted to play for them,
exactly.
But weren't down. Who was it?
Jamie Heaslip,
yeah. He didn't know who they were.
No, he did. He had tickets for them. And he said, I have no point to go and see them again.
Oh, that's it, yeah. He got slaughtered for that.
Mm.
But it's nice. It's a bit of a retro step, you know, going back to the Knoll.
Maybe that's what the provinces need to do in Wales, is to go back in and try and reintegrate themselves back into the...
It's too far gone there, Jason.
Like, okay, maybe so, but, like, you can't...
Put the genie back in the bottle.
So what are you going to do? You're just going to let it fester and... No. It has to be fixed, or else...
If it were me...
rugby dies.
I mean, the reason it's been done is because of fixture class.
Yeah, I know that, yeah.
But if it were me, I'd have gone whole hog at this, right? If I were in the marketing department of
Neat Swansea Ospreys.
I'd have gone whole hog. I'd have a special commemorative black kit made, the Ospreys badge on one side with the cross pate on the other. And I'd give it the full retro kind of thing that this is, you know, this is your neat side.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not, but it is. It's not, but it is. Against Leinster. And I'd give it the full gun, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to be just, we're playing it in the Knoll.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have made a big deal about it. And I'd have done it with other teams as well, that you could...
But they should be moving all of the clubs around. And like, instead of... Like, it's different if they're selling out the Liberty Stadium, but they don't. So they're moving it to an 8,000 capacity stadium. But like, that's probably...
10 miles away.
That's probably 3,000 more than they need.
Yeah, the other thing is, though, and this is the problem, that what you're saying would work 100% in an Irish context, right? Or in an English context, even. But in a Welsh context, where the clubs hate the regions, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the entire ground was booby-trapped come Saturday.
Well, they are the one true region. I know Neath and Swansea don't particularly love each other, but...
I think that's why
they are the most successful region in terms of how they...
I think that's why they were the one true reason, because they were built on something genuine, hatred.
Well, like, Clonetley are Scarlets are basically Clonetley.
Yeah.
There's no real merger going on there. Cardiff are basically Cardiff.
There's an awful lot of rivalry between, particularly in Munster, between clubs, between cities, yet they managed to pull it together and they said, we have a professional...
There's a bit of a Limerick-Cork thing going on there.
There is, but it's put aside. they've moved to, the major stadium has been done in Limerick. They've moved to the dual training yeah. facilities to have them one centre of excellence.
Yeah.
You know, the money in Munster rugby is really in Cork.
You don't think there's disenfranchised Cork Munster rugby fans?
I'm sure there is, but they have managed to put their differences aside develop a club that divide isn't really spoken about. Or
but they had such a good run in the early
maybe that's what got them over the
hump. I think that's what did it.
And the Swansea lads probably did as well, and maybe that's why they're the most successful regional side.
If you think back to 06, for us, from our point of view, there was huge resentment from Leinster branch that what the clubs did with the tickets for that Munster match.
You know, rightly so.
Oh, rightly so. But you know, the clubs that were seeing their, they were seeing their, say, cash cow, but their income being decimated by the Leinster matches. Whether it was 8,000 or 5,000 people turning up to Donnybrook to watch a Leinster team, meant that the 200 that would go to one club and 200 to another club and 200, they're only going to spend a certain amount of time every weekend going to watch rugby. They weren't going to go and watch a match in Donnybrook on a Friday night and rock on down to watch Wesley against De La Salle Palmerston on a Saturday. They just weren't. So, and therefore the money that people were going to spend in the clubhouse and the bars and so on, that was gone. So the clubs needed to survive. So I can kind of, in some respects, concede that they saw an opportunity to make a killing, but there was a resentment there between the clubs and the province. And then the province then kind of yielded flexed their muscles for 3 years later.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah,
and rightly so again.
But the constituents of the branch come from the clubs. So all the members of the committees
subtle,
are.
That's true. But there's a subtle difference between the Leinster professional team and the Leinster branch that runs the domestic game. They're not
synonymous. Quite synonymous.
Not quite synonymous. They're theoretically.
But John, that probably happened. Couldn't tell you the date, but it probably happened 10 or 12 years ago. But Leinster, the professional entity, existed for 12, 15 years before.
I actually think that it happened because the Munster clubs were a lot cuter than the Leinster clubs. Munster clubs realised that Europe was where it was at.
But the whole thing happened immediately. 2000.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Munster went from playing in front of 500 people in round one, to beating Saracens in round four or five, whatever it was, to then all of a sudden there was 5,000 people going over to the semi final.
I think Munster clubs realised that the European competition was where it was at a lot earlier than Leinster clubs did. That's why, we still have that. Up until quite recently, there's still been a lot that the Munster branch would have more input into Munster rugby. That the Leinster branch had into Leinster rugby, if you know what I mean. To the extent that, there was two sets of season tickets available.
Yeah.
Things like that. All that kind of stuff. Because Munster clubs realised early on that Europe was the future.
They got a taste of it in 2000. No one went to travel with that. The first time I went away with Leinster was in 2003 against Sale. And there was probably no more than 50 people at that European Cup match, right? Bearing in mind that Munster had been to two finals, and I had been at the final in the Millennium Stadium in 02, where there was probably 60,000 of them in the 80,000, probably 50,000 in the 75,000-seater stadium. Yet there was 50 people going to watch a Leinster-Heineken Cup match abroad. Do you know what I mean? So there was no rivalry because there was a few thousand would go and watch a Leinster home match, but you don't want to go to the away matches because it wasn't a thing.
But for whatever reason, Leinster rugby didn't think European rugby was going to be a thing, or Leinster branch clubs didn't think. So Leinster rugby was able to go off and do its own little thing in a corner without anyone really noticing. And by the time the Leinster clubs in 2006 realised, Leinster rugby had become a thing that was able to, 3 years later, put the smack down on them in terms of what Mick Dawson said about international tickets and stuff like that. I mean, that's like threatening a man's child. Threatening a club's international tickets is the worst thing you can do. But Leinster rugby felt confident enough to do that.
Yeah.
The Welsh relationship is very, very different. Because the club game over there was so strong, Because the ties to the club game over there were so strong, maybe the game itself was strong, but the ties to it were so strong, that regionalisation, although it was the only solution, that a country that size, with that population, with rugby in that position in terms of popularity, regionalisation was the only choice it had. It was still going to be fought against. And it still is being fought against. When you talk about Cardiff, you mentioned Cardiff there. I mean, Pontypridd won the great club. Our club easily as prestigious as Cardiff in the great scheme of rugby history. Yeah, they're part of Cardiff's region, but they have nothing to do with it.
I actually saw them play against Leinster in a Heineken Cup match in probably, the year, maybe 96, 97.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Ebbavale, I think they're part of the Dragons region.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ebbavale are a very famous rugby club. But there's no, they don't, the whole relationship
I know, but
broken.
Like, you have
broken.
To, but you do have to move on. Like the club that I used to play for Wanderers used to play Coventry, which was, and it was, there could have, you know, this is, as I say, a biannual fixture that would be, you know, both those clubs probably were providing, I'm taking a number out of my head now, probably providing 4 out of the 30 players that were playing for Ireland the next day. And yet, you know, Wanderers is a, languishing in Division 2B or whatever they are. And Coventry are a couple of leagues below the Premiership.
Yeah. And I agree, you do have to let it go, but the problem is in Wales they never have.
Sure.
That's the point I'm making. I'm not saying that they're right, what I'm saying is this
also
is how it is.
Their strength was their weakness, because their clubs were so strong, they were actually strong enough to go into the Heineken Cup, and they did.
Yeah.
They played in our league for 2 seasons as well, as the 9 clubs of their Premiership. They were actually, what killed them was their own strength. If they had been either a little bit stronger or a little bit weaker, if there were weaker regionalism, it might have happened earlier and it might have been bought into more. If they were stronger, maybe they still would have survived, you know, pretty much intact. Which really
didn't
do well.
They were the wrong men to strong enough.
They were the wrong men to strong enough, yeah, that's what did it. Ours were at this, like, even though our clubs were pretty strong in the AIL in the early 90s before professionalism, they still weren't at the level of the Welsh regions. And whoever had the brilliant idea, I can't remember off the top of my head who it was, of putting the provinces in, which was at that stage just an invitational 2 or 3 games a year, when all the guys were pulled from their clubs to play provincial rugby, became an actual professional team. I mean, that was an inspired choice, but only with hindsight, you know, it could have been a disaster.
Tom Kiernan, maybe.
I can't remember now who it was.
Sid Miller, maybe one of those.
Might have been Sid Miller, yeah. It won't come to my brain. Anyway.
If it happened, put down in Limerick, Gary Holm wanted to go.
Yeah, that's right.
But a guy called Frank Hogan was kind of a big backer, and he was he saw Gary Holm as being an equivalent of Bath.
Yeah.
You know?
Which, under the old structures, it was.
Mm.
But in the new world of professional rugby, there just isn't the numbers there to support. We see it in soccer. I mean, there's 4 professional teams, 3 professional teams in Dublin City. Right? There aren't numbers, not at the top level. There's the numbers to support them at the level they're at, and maybe actually a bit higher, because I think we know that it's badly run. But the numbers there, to support 3 professional clubs at an English Championship or Premiership level, just isn't there in soccer. And it'd be the same in rugby. I mean, there's 4 or 5 senior clubs, 6 senior clubs in Dublin alone. I mean, if they were to all go pro and all expect to be the same kind of pro as Lensford pro, there just isn't the money or the population there.
Yeah.
We have a little bit of population.
True.
I mean, London can barely support 2 rugby clubs, and that's a mega city.
Well, they have 4, don't they?
Well, they will have. They're 3. Well, one's gone. I mean, there was Wasps, Saracens, Middle Irish, Twins, and then Wasps are gone, Saracens are gone, out of London. Running Irish moving back into London.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's a city of, 8 to 12 million people.
Yeah.
Metropolitan area of 12 million people, 20 million people, 20, 12 million people.
Let's keep going.
Yeah.
There's 180 million people.
It depends on how you define the metropolitan area of London. But
it extends out past Berlin, as far as I know.
How are we, boys, as ever? Thanks for being
bad. You take my breath away, John.
Thanks.
Thanks very much for watching. If you are following us on Facebook or Twitter, please give us a thumbs up, like, answer, What's the word? Subscribe. Yes. Thanks very much. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Cheers.